Welcome to the Consummate Athlete Podcast, where we explore what it means to be a well-rounded, happy, goal-crushing athlete. Every week, myself, sports journalist Molly Herford, and cycling coach and kinesiologist Peter Glassford interview experts and chat through all of your training questions. We're excited to have you along for the ride.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to the Consummate Athlete Podcast. Peter, how's it going?
It's going well. I'm excited to be here. We have some great listener questions we're going to run through today. But otherwise, what have you been writing the last few weeks, I guess?
You keep throwing me off with these. Lots of stuff, actually. A couple good interviews. I talked to Allison Jackson and Kristen Faulkner from EF Cannondale, the new version of EF SBB TIBCO, and talked to them about their race seasons. Paris-Roubaix is coming up, so I think everyone, especially Canadians, are really watching to see if Allison Jackson can win a second time.
Okay, and you've been doing a lot of coverage. The reason you know all these team names and so forth is you've been doing a lot of coverage for bicycling.
So yes.
They're doing a lot of race coverage this year. So if folks want to check out the bicycling coverage and support that magazine.
Yes, you can find that at bicycling.com. And a lot of the race coverage actually isn't behind the paywall. So you can definitely get in even if you are not subscribed to bicycling.
Okay.
So really worth doing that. Help us, you know, keep that train rolling, keep the dream alive. But yeah, let me tell you, learning the new team names is so hard. I can't even Jumbo, Visma, Lisa, but I don't know anymore. Anyway, okay. Yeah, been super fun doing a lot of the women's coverage in particular. And yeah, lots of stuff going on. I'm working on a piece for Canadian Running Magazine all about climate change and the future of the long run is sort of the general question. You know, really just how climate change is actually affecting endurance sports and talk to some really cool people about that.
And why you mean like in the long run, not necessarily like your long runs won't happen.
Actually it was supposed to be about long runs.
Oh, like, okay.
It's going
to
be
related to environmental change.
Yeah.
Oh, like you can't be outside that long.
Like it's going to be harder and harder to be out for longer and longer as things.
I see. Because of like dehydration or smoke exposure or something.
You also have to read the article.
Okay. Okay.
Feel like you're being sarcastic right now, but it's actually like serious problem.
Can do intervals, okay.
Yeah, and then I actually got to talk to our good friend Stephen Chung about some heat adaptation stuff for a semi-related article for the magazine. So that was super interesting hearing him. He just did a meta-analysis of pretty much everything they've done on heat adaptation to this point. So first one that he's done since 2016. So we sort of got to talk through what's changed, what's the same, you know, where are there still gaps in the research? Surprise, surprise, there's still gaps in the research when it comes to women and heat adaptation. Although we were laughing, kind of laughing to keep from crying sort of thing. He's like, well, you know, it's really improved. 9% of the people in studies now are women.
Okay.
So we're really coming up in the world here. Very exciting.
Okay. Now, do you recall, is there any, like, what are the takeaways? Are there anything, how do we do this heat training? Was there anything you recall?
Yeah, you train in the heat.
Okay. That was like the big one?
Yeah, sauna apparently like is genuinely like his big thing. And really the shift from, you know, you go from your training into the sauna, you like don't cool off first. And then also don't cold plunge after. He is vehemently against cold plunging. And cold plunging is super trendy right now. So it's a big one to come out against.
Well, maybe in that specific thing, I don't know.
Nope. He's pretty against it in general.
Okay.
I'm not putting words in his mouth, but particularly right after, right? Because I think the inclination is you get out of the sauna and instantly you want to cool right off. Mm-hmm. But really, a lot of the adaptation is going to happen by your body having to cool itself down.
Sure.
That's sort of the point.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really interesting, especially because the trendy thing right now is really sauna, cold plunge, sauna,
contrast,
cold plunge, the contrast.
So yeah, and it does get into what you're trying to accomplish, right? It's not saying that contrast bathing or even ice baths, you know, depending on the person and what they're trying to do is wrong. But it is like if you're trying to adapt to heat, you know, there's already a ton of stress because we're already, you know, this scenario is something that a lot of people can't even fit into their days. When I put my coaching hat back on, I'm like, this is all great, but no one, you know, is going to also sit for 40 minutes in a hot tub.
It's the tricky bit,
after they do their bike workout. And we want to always come back to those big rocks of most people need to train, you know, more, you know, exercise more, move more, get into nature more.
You know what? I think he was on board with my, if you go on Amazon and search infrared saunas, there's a lot of like sauna suit type things now, or sauna blankets, and there is one that like basically zips over a chair, so you can still be sitting and your hands are out and your head is out, so you look kind of like in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, or whatever the, yeah, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, when the girl gets turned into a blueberry. Mm-hmm. That's sort of what you look like, but okay. It's an infrared sauna thing.
Okay.
So very seriously pondering, and maybe next podcast, it's just going to be me in that.
Sure. Well, that's something, you know, we should probably keep coming back and having people on, so maybe we can have Steven on to talk about some of those different aspects and what's coming, you know, what's new, what's more confirmed, what's less confirmed in the research, because that certainly is evolving. But yeah, I think the trying to train in the heat and not avoid, you know, the heat of the day, assuming you don't live in Phoenix or something where you'll, you know, melt into this.
There's a lot of caveats to that.
Yeah, but you're probably already heat adapted if you live there. For sure. I saw a couple come out this week too, just even about hot like bathtubs, like not even a hot tub necessarily, but just even, you know, submerging yourself in water. Mm-hmm. So interesting times.
There you have it. So, you know, we're recording this. It's April 1st. We are not doing any April Fool's Day things. I had quite enough of that at the first magazine I worked at. Never again.
I just haven't gone on the internet today. So we'll see.
Ever. Anyway, it is though the start of Q2.
That's right.
So, you know, this is a great time for, you know, cyclists.
Second quarter
of the year.
Maybe not everyone knows this. Huh.
Yeah. So we like thinking about it because, you know, for endurance athletes, Q2 is kind of a good time to check back in on the goals, maybe reset, recalibrate a little bit, because we are finally getting into the outdoor time of year, right? Like we're sort of past the indoor training phase. Maybe there's still a few days of indoor training to be done here, especially up in Ontario. It's pretty unpredictable for the next month at this point. But really, we're through the first chunk of the year. We're through the winter. We're into the spring. So yeah, how was your Q1?
Well, I mean, mine was okay. I think it was ups and downs. You know, there were some good aspects to my training. And you know, we sort of can look at, you know, did we set goals around sort of New Year's, the resolutions? So we can maybe discuss that today as well. I don't even know if I can remember resolutions. I think that's where I'm
Well, I think that's problem number one, dear.
Yeah. You got to go back and review. So maybe you had a journal where you did some of this, or you talked to your coach. Maybe you did some sort of goal setting, whether it was directly around, you're probably better if it wasn't a New Year's resolution, but something, you know, I was going to train this much, I was going to go to this thing, I was going to work on these skills. I'm trying to think of other things. You know, some people set the goal of, you know, trying to get outside once a week, which then sometimes, you know, maybe was easy this winter for some, and then was tougher for some too. So just reflecting, and it's not good or bad, but it's sort of now this kick in the butt of, okay, we have this other junction, Molly's calling it Q2, we're starting into Q2, the spring. So now what's coming down the pipe that we can look at? So you asked about mine. You know, one of my sort of resolutions, or I think of out of just like daily sort of goals, is just brushing my teeth twice, which is cliche, but, you know, is important. I want to keep these teeth, you know, when I look 2 decades into the future. So that's something that, you know, I've done pretty well with, but definitely is trouble. You know, we are sort of have been in, you know, whenever you travel, it gets trickier. The environment changes, right? So sometimes the environment change can be really great for mixing up. You know, if you always end up having dessert and you go somewhere else, sometimes it's like, oh, I didn't have dessert for a week and I didn't even think about it.
Is this just you shouting out that your parents forgot to serve you dessert last night?
I was completely fine with it. You know, again, no one asked, so I didn't end up having dessert. So that's fine.
Not that he's bitter.
I'm fine with it. And so then this brushing the teeth was tougher, but I think, you know, that's persisted. So I'm happy with myself for that one. I've done really well with, I wanted to do more jumping. We'll have Greg Lehman on here soon in the next week or a couple
coming up. Yeah,
coming in April, we'll have Greg Lehman on talking towards running injuries, a course I took that he made around running injuries that was just great. And so we talked about a few different things in that episode, but one of the things that I took away from that and a couple other sort of studies that have come out with elite cyclists and bone health and a little bit of performance, but more around sort of that aging bone health thing, is just jumping seems to me, just, you know, when we think about heavy lifting and jumping, seem like they're supposed to be good for aging, menopause, performance, all this stuff. I feel like the jumping isn't getting the attention because it's really pretty accessible. And some of these studies that Greg and I talked about are, you know, basically pretending like you're jump roping, you know, 5 by 10 times And then they saw, you know, a significant improvement just off of that. Something like this thing that only takes, you know, under 5 minutes and, you know, every day or a few times a week. So I've had pretty good success doing sort of 2 or 3 sessions. And I've really enjoyed it. And I've noticed, you know, running, I feel really more confident jumping over, you know, things on the trail, a little more springy. And I think on the mountain bike too, I'm feeling a little more, you know, I always find that like coming out of the hole, sort of power. And it's, so I think I'm getting like a little bit more power production out of that. But again, my main motivation was just, you know, if I can spend 20 minutes doing these weird hops around, you know, does this help bone health, right? As a largely as a cyclist, you know, well, this is an important thing.
It's not going to help our whole thing with the condo board about getting hardwood in here on the second floor, but well,
yeah,
that's neither here nor there.
We'll see.
Anyway, what I was going to say about your running is I think it's probably also helped your ankles because you have the tendency, your ankles go out a fair bit. Mm-hmm. So I bet it's really helped you armor
a little bit. The one I'm doing is I progressed this again. This is from January through to now. So this has been like very slow progression. Anything with jumping, especially much like heavy weights, you know, but jumping maybe isn't quite as intuitive that you can get super sore. You know, anyone who's tried to run, you know, is essentially jumping up and down. So you get really sore. So the injury risk is high, but again, low as far as equipment needs. But the one I've been doing is a one-legged side-to-side, just sort of over, if you can picture like a line. And I've been increasing how far and how high I'm jumping by, you know, changing the thing I'm jumping over or the gap that I'm jumping between. But that's been one leg. That's one of the jumps I do is a side-to-side with one leg. So it actually is a fair bit of stability on that, you know, foot, ankle, knee, hip, all the way up the chain. I think I forgot the knee in that, but it's part of it too. And so that's, yeah, I think probably helped a little bit. I still get the odd little tweak trail running, but that's maybe part of it.
Might just be you need to trail run more.
These really good trail runners roll their ankles all the time. So yeah, so that's another one. I would say hours. That was the other thing I wanted to try and stick to doing a little bit more volume. So I've been trying to plan that into the schedule. It's been harder again once we got home here. You know, we have condos and, you know, renovations and all these other things we have to do. So that's been tougher to, and the weather's been less good. So that's been a little tougher, but I'm pretty happy. I got 2-3 good months of training in there. So
I think most of your condo thing is just yelling at me to not do more things.
Well, but it could be. Yeah. So how about you? What did you...
I just got a blank on here. I just have done nothing.
Okay.
Peter really filled out this.
You're big on resolutions. So do you know what your resolutions were?
I do. I review them every single week on Mondays.
Okay.
So there. And I do actually have mine set up as like Q1, Q2. A lot of mine are more work oriented, but a big part of that is because like I work with a coach, David Roche. We've had him on the podcast a bunch. We had him on in February with his wife for Valentine's Day. If you missed that one, definitely go back and listen to it. It's probably my favorite one we've done. But to that end, I've stuck to training pretty much since we started working together, which I keep looking, I'm like, oh, geez, it's been over 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I can count on one hand the number of days that I've skipped.
Sure.
So for me, there's not really resolutions around training other than just like maintaining that training and, you know, maintaining my morning yoga, maintaining the 2 times a week strength. You know, trying to make sure that I am like sleeping a lot, eating enough, all of that stuff. But so much of, like all that's pretty much ongoing. I think this year was actually about not adding really any like wild extras, just really like sticking to the letter of the training.
Mm-hmm.
We did do a few doubles on while we were in North Carolina, which was really nice. We met a cool run group that we went out with on Wednesday nights, which is a day that I have like optional doubles. So that worked out well. Same with went on a few bike rides. Hopefully as the weather gets better, I can do a bit more of that too. And
okay. But were those your resolutions?
I mean, yeah, sticking to the plan.
Okay.
Well, that's and then good. The other big thing was really just like, it's continuing to get ready for Leadville. Leadville is 138 days away. I know this because I have a countdown thing on my phone
right. That
is a widget right on the home screen. And every week kind of moving a little bit closer towards that, working out the plan. So I have, you know, all of the map and the elevation and, you know, we've started like the spreadsheet of figuring out exactly what's going to happen at which aid station and kind of starting to put the supply list and the crew and all that stuff together, doing, you know, getting practice on the night runs, which I did this past weekend with my friend Krista.
Right.
So really just preparing for Leadville in a slow, methodical fashion has really been my like athletic Q1, Q2 into Q3 goal.
But I think it's really nice when we talk about David. I think the first time he was on the podcast was talking, this Leadville idea was just sort of like an idea, and that was 4 years ago. And he said something to the effect of like, you know, you can do it in like 3-4 years. You know, I think he would say probably you can win it because he's, you know,
I think that's what he did.
You know, those are the bold goals we whisper, you know, around. But in any case, what I love is that like we talk a lot about 2 years goal. So a lot of this is the Dan John, you know, 5x2, where it's 2 weeks or 2 months and then 2 years and then 2 decades. And then there's today and tomorrow. And so you sort of draw this line between all those points. And so what you've done is really like that, like 2 years plus, you know, okay, it's a long ways away. What do I need to get done? What can I do to improve my position now? You know, try these couple other races. You know, you crossed off, you did a 100-miler, you crossed off, you've done, you know, all these things, you night runs. And so it's really about putting these yourself in a better position when you look at what's coming in the next 2 weeks or 2 months. So in 2 months, you're going to do another race. I think you have like some relay races you're doing. You know, there's a couple different things you're doing. And then you're thinking, okay, well, I can cross off this night run in the next 2 weeks or tomorrow. I can plan these things into my schedule. And so when we're looking at this Q2, whether you do the 5x2 thing I'm describing or not, just, you know, in these next 3 months, this quarter, that you're going to have probably some spring classics, your first mountain bike or gravel races, I'm sure are coming. You know, 3 months, we know we're towards a lot of these summer races, things like BC bike race. I think we're about, it's like 3 months to, I guess that would be halfway through, that's obvious, right? To Q3, when the summer starts. So I bet a lot of us are now starting to say, okay, now I can take action on getting onto my bike, getting onto off-road terrain, learning that skill, taking that bike skills coaching clinic, whatever. You know, there's a lot of these things we can start doing to put ourselves in a better position so we don't get to the race day and be like, oh, I should have done all of this training. I've never ridden my mountain bike. I didn't test the tires, right? So we start making those lists. And that's really, I think, when we start, the purpose of these quarters is to say, okay, a little bit of reflection. And then most importantly, where am I today? You know, there's the sob story of like, I should have, would have, could have, but then given where I am today, what can we start doing in these next 2 weeks and then certainly the next 3 months?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, we've said it a billion and one times. The, you know, what I was going to say is my Q1 has been a lot of like life stuff, like life and work stuff too. We've had a lot of house projects going, but also, you know, we've had a website renovation going with consummateathlete.com, which will be up next month. It's coming. That's been a ton of work. I have my next book with Strong Girl Publishing is coming out, Sprinting Through Setbacks. And that's by Misha Powell, co-written with myself. So doing all of the work for that and like the lead up for that, like that's been a lot of my Q1. It's going to be a lot of my Q2. And, you know, it is really hard to kind of keep all of those goals, all of those balls in the air. I actually took it down because, frankly, some of it's not none of your business. I do have a whiteboard that has sort of all of, like my, we'll say it's like 8 projects that are circled right now. So it's literally my balls in the air and when they're all due and when they're all happening, including tax season.
Right, yeah. Right. So it's all coming. So, and I love that because you're now tying in these goals that, and you know, the people listening to this podcast, the clients we work with are busy people, busy adults.
That's what I wanted to kind of point out. It's just like, you know, my Leadville or your race goals and stuff, like they don't exist in a vacuum. Like we're not pro athletes who are just focusing on this stuff. And, you know, that's part of why I kind of stumble when you say like, how did your Q1 go for that? And I'm like, well, because I had it pretty dialed. I've had it pretty dialed for the last 2 years. It's really keep that going.
Well, and for a lot of us, I think we forget, you know, when I'm having conversations, people think, you know, I don't know if it's because they're talking to me as their bike coach, but you know, they forget, you know, maybe Q1 wasn't the most productive training period for you. A lot of my clients are indoors. It probably shouldn't be the most productive training period. You probably just want to maintain it, you know, as best you can with the indoor trainer and some cross training. It's not really that specific. And then, you know, maybe this next Q2 is actually building up because you're going to do something in July, August in that Q3. So now maybe these next 3 months actually are more dedicated to training. And maybe these first 3 months of the year were, you know, what else did you accomplish? And I think you can derive a lot. I've had clients sell houses. You know, there's been big medical procedures that have been behind us that we're coming back from. And you know, all these things. What else have people done? They've done, a lot of houses. House renovations, house selling has been big over the last 3 months.
I mean, I think a lot of family vacations and stuff happen this time of year.
Kids got through sports or through school. Or
ski season.
Ski season's done. You know, maybe you've done some family vacations have been crossed off. So there's a lot of these areas in life where it's, you know, occupational, you know, the family, the... all these different things, right? Just things you're getting done. And I think that's great and important to reflect on the amount of stuff you've gotten done as well. I think we're all probably guilty of forgetting to recognize this.
That's why I really do like my like very literal interpretation of like balls in the air is like all of these like main projects circled and just like out there.
Okay, so that's good on goal setting. I think, you know, when I look at it, I really want to know what's coming down the pipe, because that's what I find is a lot of athletes will get caught off guard. We know it's coming, but we're also a little like head in the sand.
For sure.
Right? So if you're doing Paris Tancaster or Barry Roubaix, these are coming in the next 2 to 3, 4 weeks from when we recorded this. And, you know, that you could extrapolate that out in 2 months from now, we're into May, June, you know, we have clients doing like solo 24 hours in June. That's coming. So, you know, what, to Molly's point about the dark, I'm calling it the dark double, but you're going out on Friday nights and riding at night and testing your light so that that isn't an issue. And, you know, you're used to riding at night and riding more in the double, you know, workout itself. So there's these things to start crossing off. It might be first mountain bike. It might be, again, skills. It might be, you know, finally getting up and getting that 3 hour ride in, you know, because you can finally get outside. And it might be cold and miserable, right? I'll be honest with you. I've been out and it's frick lobster gloves and just freezing on Saturday. Just, but, you know, we got a couple friends together and it was, there was okay moments in there.
It still sucked.
Mostly it sucked, but we laugh about it now. Yeah.
And I will say for the night runs, the worst part of the night run is genuinely just like the hour before you're leaving when all you want to do is go to bed and like just be winding down, but you're trying to like keep geared up and be ready to go. But you have like, you're open. You could just leave now and get it done while it's still light out. Like, nope, I have to actually wait for it to be dark.
And that's very like, frustrating. That's sort of a niche thing. And, you know, you can probably, whichever, but. You know, that's for some people.
Well, actually, one of our questions here is late workouts. So I am excited that we get to kind of tie this right in. Side note, if the race directors for Barry-Roubaix and Paris Tancaster are listening, please work together and come up with some kind of Barry-Roubaix like double where it's the combined times. I don't know. I just feel like there's something there.
I want combined times and I want to race between the two venues.
Oh, yeah.
Some sort of like overnight bike packing. Like
that's like the Lachlan Morton Award.
I guess. Ride between the two races. Maybe it's not even a race. Maybe it's like a neutral stage, but you have to complete the distance. Ooh. And someone will, maybe we could arrange a shuttle, you know, a truck that takes your stuff between or something.
Anyway, someone think about it or pass this along to said directors.
There you go. I had one more thing. Just, you know, a lot of times when we have this, you know, January, February, March, any of my parents, the moms especially, there's a lot of illness. You know, maybe you have injuries. Again, I mentioned there's some surgeries. You know, just maybe this didn't go that well. Keep on the path. Get back in there. And it's amazing how, you know, you can feel, I have this myself. One day, just, I think I need to quit. And then the next day, you know, I feel great. And then, you know, maybe it's not even, it's in 2 weeks, you could feel so much better. So if you're just coming back and it hasn't been a great, you know, very consistent period for you over the last quarter, back on the path, it doesn't have to be fancy, try and do a little something every day, you know, 30 minute rides count, 60 minute rides count, get outside, test your equipment. I guarantee you in 2 weeks, the sun will be more prevalent and you're going to have a nice little, your frequency in it. You know, 5 days, you'll probably feel better. But in 2 weeks from now, just try and have belief that in 2 weeks, you're going to feel even better and be more optimistic. So before you make big changes to the schedule, I would say if that's you, which I know there's lots of you out there, just on the path, you know, start training, continue training. It'll get better.
And definitely just don't panic if Q1 has not gone according to plan. I think that's why I love the Q kind of yearly thing. I never was really like into that before, but I really enjoy that exists because I think it gives you the multiple times to kind of reflect, reset, and keep going. That's why I really like my birthdays in June because it's like it kind of is like the start to Q3.
That's true. It's interesting because yours is there and mine's at the Q1.
Yep.
Yeah, right at the start. There
you go. Well, and then I still love back to school. And I think that's because it's the start of Q3. So sure. It's sort of this other reset. But the spring one is a little more ambiguous because we don't have a birthday right around it.
Not really. Yeah. So. And I mean, it is, I guess it's nice with cycling because it is sort of the seasons roughly aligned there, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. So.
Oh, I know what my other resolution is, and that is to continue drinking my AG1 in the morning.
Good segue.
Yep, I thought so. Anyway, AG1 has been a sponsor of the podcast for a long time, still one of our favorite go-to daily nutritional supplements. It just kind of has all of your stuff covering all your bases, your vitamins, your minerals, your probiotics, your prebiotics, your adaptogens, your greens, of course. Just everything you need, nothing you don't. It's NSF certified for sport, which means it has been super, super, super third-party tested. We know that it doesn't have anything in it that it doesn't say it has, and that nothing in it is going to be on that banned substance list, which, whether you're in the testing pool or not, I personally just think is super, sure, super important.
And I mean, we're getting into this travel season, so there's going to be, you know, you're traveling for races or whatever you're traveling for, so that's an aspect here, especially the travel packs that you get free if you use our link here. You get some bonus travel packs when you try this out. And then also, I mentioned a few of the bike packers seem like they're, you know, these, especially the extended bike packing trips, so they're taking, you know, some sort of greens thing, but let's say AG1 packets, the travel packs, and you can sort of have your whatever 10 days of packets, and those just in the morning you can have that, and just to augment there when you're, you know, living on, you know, Mars bars or something the whole way through. Do they have Mars bars? Maybe I should say Snickers.
Milky Way.
It doesn't matter.
Snickers
works. This isn't a Snickers ad.
Hungry? Why wait? No, I think that's a really good point, especially bike packing. You know, when you do actually stop for a meal, you don't really want to order the salad, right? You want to order the most calorically dense thing. It's actually funny. We have an RD coming on in a few weeks from now, but I did the interview with her last week, and I was joking that the best thing in the world happened to me when I did a 20 miler with a few friends a couple weeks ago. We went to a breakfast spot afterwards, and at this breakfast place, they put the caloric count on the menu. I don't know if you have to. I don't think you have to do that in Ontario. They just do it, which seems like a weird thing to do. And I was so excited to be with a group of four people that were all actively looking for the most calories on the menu. Like, not like, ooh, this one has 900, that's a little... No, we're like, oh, this one's 1,200, perfect, we just ran 20 miles. So that was really fun. But that brings to mind, like, bike packing. You're not necessarily looking for, like, what's the healthiest thing on here? You're like, what's the most calories for my buck.
Yeah, I think that's what Brooks spoke about when he's been on.
Yeah.
In any case.
So anyway, drinkag1.com/MollyH. You get 5 free travel packs and a year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D, little droplets. And of course, your AG1 delivered right to your door. It is seriously the most convenient process. And if you're going to be like on vacation for a month, it's super easy to pause, easy to restart. 10 out of 10 recommend. drinkag1.com/MollyH. Check it out. And on the note of fueling, on the note of late night workouts, I love this listener question here. So I have a question for you guys based on the great episode with Charlotte. That's Charlotte Backus. Go back and listen to that one. Really fun episode. We kind of went all over the place with that one. But she mentioned recovery fuel after working out. Unfortunately, all my training is done between 9 and 11 p.m. Oh, yikes. After which I go straight to bed. So I don't really have an opportunity to fuel after training. Do you have a recommendation? Am I doing it wrong? So night riding, you know, what do you do for fueling after that?
Well, and I think this would be probably trainer riding if I had to guess. I don't think this is outdoors.
I'd be very impressed if it was outdoors.
I mean, these people are out there, but yeah, usually this is the case, and it's like after the kids go to bed or for whatever reason, right? And so it happens. I always want to be careful, you know, it's always this balance of training enough to achieve the goal, but then not disrupting sleep with the workout or the fueling. So it is a good question. Generally what I see people do is, you know, they've had breakfast, lunch, dinner, you know, maybe dinner with the kids or whatever, dinner with the family. And then again, like sort of they get through the wind down period and then they get on the bike. So you've had most of your food for the day. So it is sort of an interesting challenge. So I think what most people do is they would have maybe like a recovery shake or a smoothie. You want to blend the smoothie before your family go, you know, before they go to sleep,
yeah,
because you can't run the blender when the kids are sleeping. So a lot of people have told me that's an important step in that process. And then you go to bed, and it is a little weird, but I think most people in this situation, like, it's their everyday, so they get used to it. Like, for me, that would be like, what do you mean I don't get to eat like a giant bowl of cereal or something, you know?
Well, and yeah, she does, I will note, she does say she sleeps really well after the workout. So
this is Charlotte, you mean?
No, the question.
Oh, okay. I don't know if this person does, yeah.
Yeah, this person sleeps well after the workout. So there's not like a getting to sleep issue.
Yeah, so there's maybe not even a concern. Maybe they're good.
Well, I mean, I would say this is a situation for not a shower beer, but a shower like shake is probably how I would do it. Because yeah, you don't really, you want to get to bed pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. I would say, honestly, if I was in this situation, I would probably just be doing like a chocolate milk or a whey protein just in a water bottle in the shower. Like, I would just be multitasking the heck out of that. Mm-hmm. And smoothie could work. My only thing would be not having like really cold beverages, because I find like personally that's gonna like pump me up a bit more. I would actually almost be inclined to do like a hot chocolate with my recovery shake. I know, you know, Scratch makes their like hot cider, but I would probably go, yeah, like a hot, like actual hot chocolate, or you know, just a warmer chocolate whey protein kind of thing.
I don't know if this person has a problem, so that they might be okay, right? But so you never want to change something too much. I would just be, you know, the question would be, could you, you know, feel better if like there was a recovery concern? There'd maybe be a bit of variation if these workouts sometimes were very intense, or very, you know, sometimes they were more towards the 2 hours and sometimes they were more towards the shorter, which probably there should be. If this was an everyday thing, I'd rather see some of these are like a 30, 45 minute workout, so that you could get maybe an hour of just like relaxing or in bed earlier, whichever. But that would be maybe where you would see maybe the whey protein alone wouldn't be enough. Maybe you would need a bit more as far as carbohydrates. And the signs to me would be, you know, you're waking up at 1 or 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. with that sort of like wired, you know, that's a good sign that there isn't enough fuel in there. You're sort of getting like a, I don't know if it's glucose, you know, your blood sugar or something dropping.
Well, and certainly if you're starving in the morning when you wake up.
That's probably okay, just if it disrupts sleep. Like, you can be hungry in the morning, but yeah, you wouldn't want to be like ravenous and waking up at 4 or 5. Like, some of that stuff, like if you're not able to sleep the amount of time you're able to sleep, you know, before the alarm goes off, then that would be something that I would play with, is these different types of foods. And it doesn't have to be whey protein, you know, it could be yogurt or it could be whatever, right? To try and get that. Molly said chocolate milk or something like that too. But just playing with that, just so there are some nutrients there. I had said to this person, I usually try and respond as well, just because sometimes it's a while, but between when we get these questions, and please keep putting those questions in via, you can use our contact form at consummateathlete.com or a DM on the social.
Slip into our DMs.
But I did say to this person, you know, you might want to go through a couple of these different options and just see, you know, what type of response you're getting.
Well, because the last thing you want is something that boings you up at 1 a.m. because it's, you know, spiked your blood sugar, or, right, you know, it doesn't really super agree with you.
But for anyone, there was a big trend there for a while. A lot of athletes were doing this, and I haven't heard a lot about it recently, but there was that trend there where a lot, they showed like whey protein, even, you know, the casein protein is the slower release one. So you'll see bodybuilders will use that, you know, to try and keep the protein drip going overnight. But there was a while there where just taking in protein, you know, again, it could probably be Greek yogurt or something too, before bed, again, just to try and like help with that rebuilding that anabolic processes, growth hormone, whatever, overnight. So even without a workout right before bed, that was something that was trendy for a while there. And again, I haven't heard about that, but it seemed like it made sense to me, and some people really liked it. So mm-hmm. that would be something, you know, this just makes sense to me, is that like, even if you did get your meals in during the day, probably doing this makes sense.
Yeah. I guess even during your cool down, that like if time is of the essence, right? Like if you really do need to get into bed quickly, mm-hmm. honestly, I would just have the smoothie or the shake or whatever, like right by, and I would literally just drink it while I'm just doing my 5 minutes of cooling down.
That's a good point too. I mean, you could probably even consume it mostly during the workout, to be honest, like fuel during the workout. And yeah, maybe you could try something like the BCAAs or just starting drinking whey protein. Like there's probably nothing would go wrong.
Well, probably just don't do that during like a super hard interval.
No, but you wouldn't. Yeah, you don't want to, like that would be weird, but towards the end of the workout, that's a great point. You could probably start in the last bit if you were cooling down.
Yeah, because I think the only thing we want to avoid here is really just like extending bedtime by another 30 minutes. And I think that's the trick, right?
It is. I do see this sometimes where people will do that like 9 to 11. And I do wonder if like 9 to 10 or 9 to 9:45 most often is a better, right? Because it's that thing that like you work more. This isn't the person didn't ask us necessarily to go over the workout. But I do wonder like that, because that there's that idea that like if you get into bed by 10, you know, those couple hours before midnight, the first, it's not really so much before midnight, but that's the usual flow of our society. Those first couple hours are where that sleep can be most beneficial. And I don't know if that's completely borne out in the research, but that's I do wonder sometimes with these later workouts is how late do we need to push them? So if there is any, that would be the other variable there too. I would look at it as well as just that being careful with how late those things go.
For sure. All right, love it. And feel free to, you know, follow up with any thoughts on that after that if we didn't really answer it. Ooh, okay, so I love this this next question. What are your thoughts about whether a coach needs to be a great rider or if a less skilled rider can coach someone with higher skill? So this is the Usain Bolt question.
Yeah, because his coach is not a runner, is that what you mean?
Yeah, like if you watch anything with Usain Bolt and you see his coach, not a runner. Like, very much so, not a runner. Like, maybe was a runner back in the day. Well, I have no...
And so this is, like, one of my... I think you know this, that this is, like, one of actually my pet peeves.
Why I said it was a great question.
Because cycling, especially mountain biking, is, like, the only sport... Like, I actually can't think of another sport where there's this, like, bro... And I'm going to just say it's, like, such a bro egotistical, like, view of it. Like, if you look at a lot of these coaching courses, they're, like, pretty bro-y. And it's just this like ego, like you need to be this like flow rider.
Look, I'm not going to call the one out.
No, you don't need to name anyone.
No,
I mean, there's
I'm not
only
going
three.
To. But I'm
going
to point out, we went to one of these coaching courses and like I got laughed at for wearing spandex and having clip in pedal, like having pedals. Like, it was the weirdest experience I have ever had.
Right, right. And I mean, I think that's fine. Like, I mean, flat pedals are fine. We like flat pedals. But, yeah, it's just not very accepting, right, to meet people where they are coming from where they are, right? And so the question would be, you know, for a coach, if we look at NFL, like, what are the best sports in the world, the most supported sports, the ones with the most sports science, like, what are those coaches doing? Like, does the NFL coach throw, you know, the football to his, you know, like run the sprints with them and like think about basketball, baseball, right? Not really. Like even the specialist coaches, you know, the pitching coaches, you know, they're not in there like, hey, let me show you how to throw the fastball.
I mean, if they could, they'd be in the freaking...
Right. And you're talking about running, right? Like, I can't think of really a scenario like that. Now, mountain biking and cycling are a little different because like the sport moves. It's not like in, you know, with the exception of track cycling, which is a great one. You know, a lot of great coaches are in track because they're able to coach, you know, in the circle there. And then you see that. So it is an odd thing that we need to, the mountain bike coach especially needs to, for some reason, be the most skilled person in the area, right? Like, it's really an odd thing. So I'd
also point out, for Peter to have this bent is actually very funny because he is, in fact, in most cases, the most skilled rider in the area.
Often. And so maybe that's like a privileged thing for me, is that like it's something that I am able to utilize in my coach. I think it's an asset if you're a good rider.
I just think it's funny that it is you're of the opinion, or like, I think
well,
it almost,
because I feel very bad gives, because it, we miss a lot of like good teachers, mm-hmm. and good coaches because we make them feel bad.
Well, I'm saying it gives leverage to your opinion because you actually are the skilled guy and you're saying that that's not like mm-hmm. necessarily the like best coach.
Yeah. And so it's like, you know, would we rather have someone who speaks very well, sets up really great environments, whether that's games or, you know, choosing a route, you know, again, some of the mountain biking stuff can be tough because you have to go into the forest. You know, I think e-bikes are going to open up a bunch of this stuff as well, where at least you don't have to be as fit to keep up with some of the athletes. But yeah, I don't know. I think the answer to this question is no, I don't think you need to be that. But I think if that is not an asset you bring to mountain bike coaching, to cycling coaching, and you have to ride with people, like you do have to solve that problem somehow. And I think you might invest a lot into your teaching skill, your movement assessment, your skill acquisition, you know, going deep on that stuff. But I think that is definitely where coaching should go. And as we see, like, the professionalization of coaching, it's probably the direction things should go. But yeah, we'll have to see. And I think e-bikes will help with some of that, like getting the coach to the place on the trail that you need to get to. Like, that's sort of the inevitability, right? You can't just keep and shouldn't keep people in like a parking lot, you know, when we're trying to teach them how to mountain bike. At some point you do need to get it onto the trail and do that, but there's lots of ways for that to happen too. So I don't know if that helps at all, but there you go.
Okay, love it. I mean, it is a tricky one because that's not even including the fact that, you know, there are better coaches and there are worse coaches, both subjectively and objectively, well, right?
And in certain areas and for certain athletes. And
I've, you know, I've gone to tons of different skills things over the years, and, you know, some of them are fantastic, some of them are less so, and I'm sure other people would go to the exact same ones and have completely different experiences. So it also is, you know, so very rider dependent. So basically, like, don't judge a coach by their outward appearance necessarily, but also, like, don't be afraid to be like, oh, I don't really feel like I'm getting anything out of this. This doesn't feel good. And you switch.
No, and I mean, the coaches I like to work with are, some of them are really good at, you know, building ramps, but then also like setting them up. And some of them come up with like cool games, and some of them are great speakers. Some of them are like teachers. So they, you know, just can really move a group around well. Some of them are first aiders, right? Like, it's when you think about the skills of a coach, this is also the problem with cycling coaching, especially, is that it's the like such a poor sport, like poor as far as we don't have a lot of money. Like, it's not the NFL, you know, when I go to coach, it's often just me doing everything instead of me as like an NFL coach, where I would have a, you know, whatever, the defense coach, the offense coach, is just testing my knowledge of NFL, you know, tackling coach, whatever, strength, you know, strength and conditioning coach. There's all these different coaches, plus people setting up the field for you, right?
Right.
There'd be like all these, like, you know, people, yeah, go put the pylon there or whatever.
I mean, that's also, there's the fact that like cycling just is a sport that's for everyone, not for the top 0.0001% of football players in the country. So it does make it, yeah, harder to have that.
Well, and then, yeah, what are we talking about when we talk about coach? Are we talking about someone who's teaching someone like their first time on a bicycle, or is this, you know, elite racers, or is it enduro or downhill or whatever, right? And those coaches will all, you know, look and have different skills and, you know, whatever. But I think it's odd to think that that's, and at the top level of the sport, it just can't possibly be true, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you're coaching Vanderpool or a top enduro person or a top, you know, Red Bull Rampage person, you can't possibly be better than them. That would be very odd.
Well, again, if you were better than them, you'd be doing it.
Right. Yes, that's it. That's the, what is that analogy? The you know, those who can't teach or something.
Yeah. Those who can't do, teach, those who can't teach.
So I guess where I'm going with this is, if you're someone who just isn't naturally Matthew Vanderpool or, you know, doing backflips, then of course you can be a coach. But I think, you know, you need to be a student of the sport and learn those other skills and aspects of coaching and find that like niche, the couple skills, jobs that you're really good at. And we've had coaches who are great at driving, you know, they're essentially almost mechanics, you know, and they can drive, but then they're also coaches, and there's a place there for you, I think, in cycling for sure. But yeah, I wouldn't, there's no reason you can't coach movement as someone who's not quite as skilled at that movement, for sure.
Love it. Okay, last question, and we're going to keep our answer to this relatively short. We have done a couple episodes sort of around this. I've written about it extensively, but...
So we'll try and link... We'll link certainly to Marco's stuff, but then a couple of the other episodes, we've tried to go deeper on it.
Yeah, but this is definitely a topic that keeps coming up. I think it will keep coming up, and I think the answer is going to keep shifting slightly even...
Has to.
As things change.
No strong opinions on this.
I mean, I have some, but... Okay, so how to incorporate advice that Whoop suggests into a written training plan, or should you even pay attention to what Whoop suggests? So if you don't have a Whoop or an Oura Ring or any of these various wearables, the too long didn't read is that every morning you're wearing these things 24/7, and every morning your app, the Whoop or accompanying app, is going to give you advice based on all of the data that it has collected throughout the day and the night. Do you think that's like a fair, and then it'll say.
As far as I know, that's how WHOOP works. Yeah. So they know how much you moved. How much did your wrist jiggle around? They guess at how much you slept. And then they take some readings around heart rate and heart rate variability.
And it usually gives you sort of one major score and a suggestion, whether it's, you know, the take it easy or keep doing what you're doing, or maybe you're getting like that it thinks you're getting sick. That's the basic how this thing works. So is that helpful, especially if you are working from a, you know, pre-designed training plan? You're not someone who's just getting up and doing kind of whatever as exercise. You actively are, you know, chasing a goal and following a plan to get there.
Yep.
So.
Well, so there's a few different things. So as Molly said, a lot of these things will give a estimate or a combined measurement that's like your readiness. And so it sometimes, you know, it'll take sleep score, it'll take your HRV and your heart rate maybe, and then also how much you've moved around the day before. So say it was Sunday yesterday for us, and I did big ride, and then, you know, whatever, slept at night, however I slept, woke up today. Usually Monday would be a rest day in the training plan, but then what you might find is that today it says, you know, maybe that I slept poorly and I exercised a lot yesterday, and then what, maybe my HRV is normal. But then it might say, oh, you're really tired today because I trained a lot yesterday, right? And maybe, again, it measured or thinks it's measured that my sleep isn't very good. So it's made this score that says you probably aren't ready to train. And that may be true, but it may not be true.
Which is fine for when you have a recovery day. But if, for example, you were actually in the middle of a big build phase and you were purposefully training tired, which is absolutely a way that you train, like that's a positive thing, you know, in a lot of cases, not all the time, but like it is an important part of the training process. You know, the WHOOP could be like, oh, don't do it, even though the point is that you're training slightly tired.
Sure. So that's where having the plan is important, A, so that there are rest days in the week. So that's, I see that very commonly, like people don't take actual rest days, and there's a whole mental thing in there. And more I'm encouraging people, like if you cannot take a rest day, I would go talk to someone for sure. Like, and you know, it's uncomfortable to say that. It's a very short way for me to say that. I could say it more gently to you. But I would go look into it because it's going to be something that's going to be helpful in the long run.
For sure.
To look into the reason that you can't take a rest day. And I think rest days, we are completely fine with that being a little bit of yoga mobility, some walking with the dog, some walking without the dog, whatever your walking situation.
Definitely not walking all day to hit 30,000 steps.
Right. Like, just taking the focus off there, right? And so that's important. And this is the idea of following a plan. And that's where Molly says, you know, this past weekend was a pretty big, for both of us, I guess, a fair bit of mileage. So yeah, certainly Sunday, I don't think either of us really wanted to move. Probably if we had, you didn't put on any, oh, you did put on something.
I don't know. I haven't looked at it. Oh. So this is, I was going to get to my next point.
Okay. Molly had an aura on. This is a, so it's good. So in any case, Sunday, it might've said poor recovery. And this is this heart of the question. So let's get this out here before we go to otherwise. Sunday morning, it probably would have told both of us, if I'm guessing, you know, a bit of disruption in HRV heart rate. You moved a ton more yesterday, extra workout even for both of us. We both did a double.
Sleep was definitely funky because I came in at 10 after a run.
Oh, yeah. Like that was sort of weird. So there was like more 11. Movement a little later, maybe. So then the question is, should we have not trained on Sunday? But that was the plan, was to be tired on Sunday. You know, it's the time of year to be putting in the volume, to increase the workload more than we've been used to. So in that case, that would be poor. If that was the recommendation, that would be poor. And I would follow the plan. And because the idea was that it was, I would almost go no matter what, like, and I did my point-to-point ride so that I had no choice. Like, you are the only way out of this thing is at the end of the ride when you get to the other end. But that's not how we would always do it. And that was a single day. So where did you want to go from there?
Well, my two points about wearables. Point number one is that the wearable should never supersede how you feel. So just the quick caveat that, like, these things are not perfect. Even when they're operating at perfect, they're not perfect.
Yeah.
And they're very susceptible to, you know, random disruptions and flaws and, you know, the battery doing funky thing, like all of these things, or just not measuring correctly. Like sometimes your ring or your watch is just broken.
Right.
Especially, like, side note, if you're using a Garmin, please ignore when it says productivity. Just no, not a thing. Don't worry about it. Even the Garmin people kind of say that. So do not stress on that. But point being, these things shouldn't tell us how we feel. They can maybe confirm some facts about how we're feeling. Like, oh, I think I'm getting sick. Huh, my like body temperature does seem to be rising.
Mm-hmm. Like, which is a great thing with the Aura, that it does have temperature in there. Yeah, I think that's a great one. I've seen that, like, whoa, like that's a big one. And then someone, you know, previously, you know, more of the COVID, but then now just with colds and stuff.
Yeah, super helpful. If it matches how you're feeling. But I think what really ticks me off is I'll hear, actually, you know, I hear a lot of podcasters, even outside of the endurance sport, more on like the wellnessy side of things, and they're using Aura rings and they're like, oh, I wake up every night and the first thing I do in the morning is I check how I slept with my Aura app. I'm like, the fact that you haven't even reflected on how you think you slept before you're asking a machine to tell you how you slept just makes no sense to me.
So that's, I think, what you're beating around there is, I wouldn't really use it on a single day. So in the case of the sleep stuff and even the recovery, like I would probably start looking at it maybe on the weekly and start seeing those trends in the baseline and how things are trending. So if your sleep has been like just trending poorer and poorer over the last week, you look at it on, say, a Sunday after your long ride, you've gotten through the week, it's a rest day tomorrow, and you look at the week, then it might be interesting to say, huh, you know, my HRV has been like tanked all week and I've not felt good. I've not performed well. And so now we're starting to triangulate, or even more, I don't know what's after triangulate, but we have a lot of points of how did I feel? Did I perform well? Did I perform as expected? Was the RPE, the feeling, higher? Have I had a cold all week? Did I sleep poor based on my reflection? And then if it seems like that data can add to that picture, then that could be useful information that, okay, well, maybe next week I will take a rest week or two extra days light to start the week, something like that. So that's, I think, where I would use some of this data.
And then I think we've said it fairly recently, but I'm going to reiterate it. Data from week one, not helpful. Like, you have to have a few weeks of data, at least a couple weeks of data, before any of these measurements are at all helpful. And even if you dig into the, like, even if you dig into just what Whoop and Aura say, like, a lot of times it's like, no, we can't, we're guessing at this point. Mm-hmm. In 14 days, there will be more of a, like, actual trajectory or trend thing. But right now, they're just doing their best estimate.
Right. So you want to, that's your baseline. And so what I would suggest with Whoop, especially if anyone who uses Training Peaks, the person who asked this question uses Training Peaks, they actually have in the dashboard, and you could do this a few different ways. You could export it and just do it in Excel if you wanted. You can just export the heart rate and the HRV as their own values. And that's really what you want, is these measurements. This is one of Marco's big points, is there's estimates and there's measurements. So when they say your VO2 max is this, that's a estimate. They did not measure you doing that, but the heart rate is measured at least, and the HRV is measured. And so these are things that we can really hang our hats on and look at on the long term. How is that? Are those values changing versus your baseline? And if you see, especially, you know, 2 days where that resting heart rate's really high or really low, or the HRV is like doing something, you know, and trending out of the, you can then reflect on it. And so what I'll sometimes find with myself is, you know, I haven't been getting enough just pure aerobic days, you know, endurance days. And then sometimes you'll see if you do that for a couple of days, then that builds up that HRV and you're starting to feel better. And sometimes it's, you know, you're just missing that. You've missed a few days. And this just gets back to the original, like, well, what do? You train frequently, right? Mostly easy, you know, and most days of the week you train in your sport, and that's training. And so you can see that confirmed in the data sometimes.
Yeah. I think what we're really looking for with any of these wearables is finding the sweet spot between being completely obsessed with the data that's coming in and just kind of constantly opening the app and like scrolling through it and looking at it and being like really like having it basically stress you out more, or to ignoring it entirely and you just have it because they're, you know, supporting the Mountain Bike World Cup and you're into that.
But you put it on. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I was like, I really like supporting companies. I always say, like, you know, put a Clif Bar in your pocket. It's like Clif Bar has supported cycling forever, like since I started, right? So it's like I don't know.
But I think there's the sweet spot of, like, you put it on and you never use it. So, like, why are you paying the subscription versus the you're absolutely obsessed with it, you're checking it multiple times a day, it's completely changing, you know, you're not going to go out with your friends because you say, because it said you need more rest and recovery. You feel all right, but, like, you know, you think you should stay home, and now we're skipping time with friends or all that kind of stuff. So just there's a middle ground to be found where we accept that the data is decent and can definitely guide us a little bit, show us some trends, and be really helpful. You know, like for me, the Oura Ring, one of the benefits is it actually will predict, I'm going to say ovulation, and no one take that to mean that I'm, like, attempting to have a child here. I'm strictly using it because I want to see if it actually is going to show me where in my cycle I am. And I think that's a super cool, like, addition to it. I think that, you know, sleep is cool for reasons we'll get into in another couple episodes. The fact that it can monitor my sleep is interesting. Same with pulse oximeter. But I'm not looking at it in the morning. I'm not checking how I slept. I wake up and I think about, how do I feel?
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, I think the main thing is that this is another piece of data, especially the measurements, the HRV, the heart rate, if you can use those just to see, you know, okay, I'm feeling poor. And then this seems like it's out of my baseline, my average. And it's maybe been like that for like a day or two or three. This might be a sign that we're getting worn down. And again, could take a rest day could take a more aerobic day. But I don't think it would be on a given day. It wouldn't be the sole thing. Like, I wouldn't look at it in the morning and say, oh, not training today. I would always proceed with the plan. And then if I'm like, oh, I feel really tired, I'm not super motivated today, then the HRV was low and I'd start warming up. And then if it was just like, yeah, this doesn't seem great, then I would do an aerobic day. And this is sometimes what gets missed is some people think they go home. And usually I would continue and do the time prescribed as an aerobic day. If it was an aerobic day already and I was feeling poor motivation, then I would maybe shorten the aerobic day, you know, down to something like a 90-minute ride, which versus, say, a 3-hour ride. Again, scale this to yourself and how much you train. You know, if you're an hour training person, you maybe do 45 minutes of zone 2 instead of 60 in that last example where it was an aerobic day. So that's how I would look at it, is it's sort of like these, you know, if it's off, then I would just be like, okay, maybe today I'll have to adjust, but like go into it and see, because probably the next day would be either aerobic or off. So it's like, this is where following a plan is probably the most important thing. And then triangulating some of these other things and being flexible with it, right? Like, I think most elite athletes would modify their training. And that's why we have ranges, you know, zones in the training for the intensity. And then also usually ranges in the time. Like, a lot of clients can get frustrated because I'll put like 90 minutes to 3 hours. And that's sometimes why that range is there, is like, you know, if you're motivated, go for the longer one. You know, if all systems are going, then if it seems like, you know, it's going to be a struggle, then, you know, you don't have to struggle today.
Mm-hmm. Love it. And we actually will have a question on that coming up in the next couple of weeks that sort of goes into that a bit more too. But for now, let's wrap up there. So if you have more questions, consummateathlete.com. We have a contact form there at consummateathlete on Instagram. Do us a solid, rate, review, subscribe to the podcast. Super, super helpful. We are on YouTube. If you prefer watching us or you've never seen us in real life and are just wondering what the heck we look like, you can come hang out. Thanks as always for tuning in. Have a great training week and we will see you next time.
Thanks so much for tuning in to the Consummate Athlete Podcast. If you want to hear more training, racing, and endurance sport advice, make sure you subscribe to the podcast and leave us a rating and review. You can also subscribe to our newsletter at consummateathlete.com for a weekly dose of inspiration and advice straight to your inbox.